Welcome to Radio Contra, the podcast of American Partisan. I'm Nancy Scout, and I'm coming to you live from the G Camp in rural North Carolina. There's a lot to talk about in this episode. Obviously, the big thing in the news right now is the killing of General Soleimani, the Iranian general, one of the most important military figures in the Middle East, and a major power player with Iran, and not anymore. First and foremost, this guy was the head of the Quds Force, which is essentially fifth column when we talk about communist revolutionary movements, and it is important to know that Iranian model is an Islamic revolutionary movement. You have the conventional military, and then you have the fifth columnists that work both interior, with their interior missions, as well as working abroad. Hezbollah, or the Party of God, is part of that. And the Quds Force, in particular, is there to liberate, their express purpose is to liberate Jerusalem and make it Al-Quds. They refer to it as Al-Quds. And something that you need to know is the ideology of these people, aside from simply being Shiite Muslims, is that they believe in an ideology called Twelvers, or the belief that the 12th Imam will come back from, he will rise out of the well in the city of Qum. It's very important to understand that, and the 12th Imam is the divinely inspired Imam, the Mahdi. Those of us that have been to Iraq, fought in Iraq, will remember the Mahdi militia. These were the Shiite militias and still are. And, you know, not to dive too deep into the history of the region, but in Iraq in particular, Iraq is not a nation ethnic groups kind of pushed together, similar to Yugoslavia. Sunnis that are Arab, Shiites that are Persian, and Kurds, which are kind of doing their own thing related to the mountain peoples of the Caucasus region. It's caused a lot of problems, a lot of political discord. It remains to be seen exactly what the response is going to be from Iran. As of this time, Reuters is reporting that the red flag of Hussein, which is a declaration of war among the Persian peoples, has been raised. We also know that they have numerous, if not dozens, of sleeper cells inside the United States. They have a large presence, I can tell you for a fact, in Brazil, and they have infiltrated people via our very open southern border. And let's not forget who has been at the forefront of leaving our southern border open. That's right, the Democrats. The very same Democrats, the Marxists, that have decried this action, very, very ballsy action. You know, essentially, Trump didn't have the authority to do this. It was unnecessary. A lot of things that are being said right now, and I'm sure that the Sunday morning shows are going to be full of this. But it's interesting because they never seem to have a problem when the last president did literally the same thing, but to far minor players in the Middle East. Another thing to know, too, is that when it comes to international relations, there's certain figures that are considered off the table. And when you're talking about senior government officials, senior general staff, etc., normally they're untouchable, or at least in the government context, they're considered non-targets. And Trump said, no, we're not doing that. You know, and for all the criticism that's out there, I'm going to say, you know, good on them. We're not playing this game. And a lot of people right now are speculating what a war with Iran would look like. And I can tell you this, fighting on the ground would be pretty rough. Iran is a very mountainous place, but it will not be a conventional war. And Trump's a guy that has learned from mistakes of the past, too. And he was very critical of both war in Iraq and war in Afghanistan. And I think that if he's going to do something, which he already has, it's going to be big. It's going to be a major attack, and he's going to want to end this thing quickly. So you can read into that what you will. And again, you know, I'm only speculating on this, but it's important to know that these things can escalate quickly. I would not rule out the use of nuclear weapons. And I never thought in my adult life that I would say that, but I'm not ruling that out. And when we take into account the fact that Iran is closely allied with Russia, China, as well as North Korea, and let's not forget, North Korea said that they would unveil a super weapon during Christmas, which they have yet to do. So we're going to see how that works out. But all these guys are allies. All these nations are allies. And when we're talking about, you know, great changes in the world, I think that one of the reasons the left was so adamant about keeping their people in power was to maintain that status quo. It was very profitable for them here in the United States. We're talking about the deep state apparatus, the organized left in the United States, so on and so forth. How does that work into domestic issues here at home? The sharp divide here in the United States is not going to go away. It hasn't went away. And I expect it to only get worse. I am a product of college campuses in the early 2000s. And I remember that there was a very sharp divide. And I think that it's interesting how the left in America kind of romanticizes George W. Bush now. And, you know, he had that photo op a couple months ago with Michelle Obama. They were literally calling this man Hitler back in the early 2000s, especially during the Iraq invasion. So it's interesting how they're romanticizing him, and they're literally moving on and saying the same thing about Trump that they were about Bush at the time. But I can assure you this, all of the craziness that went on then, you can multiply that at least tenfold. And I think that this is going to be a signal to the fifth column working here in the United States. And there is pretty good evidence of at least one element that I'm aware of Hezbollah that has been caught working with Antifa. And that was in 2013. And I would expect more of that. I am here to tell you that times are very dangerous. Very, very dangerous, folks. And you need to be on your toes. All right, let's talk about some of our sponsors. Ammo.com, one of the best sites to get ammunition on the net. You do not have enough ammunition for what's coming down the pipe. All signs are pointing to the fact that there is going to be a conflict. There's a conflict abroad. There's going to be a conflict at home. You better have the means to get your ammunition now while you need it. Ammo.com, click on the link, $200 order or more, you'll get $15 off that first order. Go hit them up, ammo.com. I'd like to give a shout out to my very good friend John Ammons over at UW Gear. You know, you got your ammunition, you got your rifle. Now you need a quality chest rig to run your equipment. And there are very few that I know of that are equal in quality to what John puts in his work over at UW Gear. So drop him a line, tell him that you need to get squared away, and he'll be more than happy to hook you up. All right, moving into our next segment. So recently, with all of the goings-on in Virginia, the protests, the organization, a lot of different organizations out there are putting calls to have folks come out, not only for the projected January 20th protest, but obviously for the follow-on activities that are going to go on after that. And one of the calls that I saw was for trainers to come out. And I had a couple of questions about that. You know, primarily, who is this that's going to be trained? Where is this training going to be conducted? But really, most importantly, what is the medal or mission essential task list? What are you being trained to do? So the train-up process in any military unit goes in cycles. You have the green cycle, which everybody knows about. Green cycle is when you're ready to roll. You are Redcon 1 or Readiness Condition 1. You are cleared to deploy. You're cleared to work. All right. You've got yellow cycle. Yellow cycle is normally when you are training up for the deployment, and that can last anywhere from 6 to 12 months, depending on the condition of your personnel, depending on how many new personnel you have, and depends on the type of unit, what the mission for that unit is. And then, of course, you have red cycle, which means you are non-deployable, and you're in the middle of rebuilding your unit, resetting your unit. So when we talk about a medal, a mission essential task list, we're asking ourselves, what is it that we are training to do? And there's a lot of confusion there. Folks get wrapped around the axle thinking that they need to operate like a conventional military. That's wrong. That is very wrong. The first thing that you need to understand is that you're a potential partisan, a potential guerrilla. You are not a conventional military force. You don't have the support structure behind you that a conventional military does. Not only that, you don't have the authority that a military force does either. And that's a very important thing when you're talking about the second and third order effect of a guerrilla force operating in an area. You know, the civilians on the battlefield, the civilian populace is very, very important. And for a guerrilla, you have to always maintain good rapport with them and the respect of the people. Because once you've lost that, they're going to feed you to the wolves. So when you're running around with a military-style uniform on and a plate carrier and a rifle out in the open and you look like a soldier, guess what? One of two things is going to happen. Number one, it positively identifies you to your opposing force. It makes PID real easy. PID, positive identification, right? If you're running around dressed up like a soldier, you're going to get treated like one. Second, builds a barrier between you and the civilian populace. You're looked at like the exact same thing that they're fighting against. And depending on you, it's going to be a very hard sell whether or not you gain support of the civilian populace. But on the other side of that, if you look like the people in the area in which you represent, you blend into the local populace, you also can gain favor with the local populace. You look like you're not that much different than the people in that area. And it works real well for recruiting as well, especially when you're talking about building an underground movement, that support network, the ability to pass messages, the ability to get medical equipment and medical treatment in the underground, as well as something as simple as a hot meal. These things are really, really important. And if you're running around looking like a conventional military force, you're going to get your butt handed to you. Not only that, all of the guys on the battlefield, all the insurgents that I came up against, if they were dressed like a conventional military force, you know, wearing their Chinese Type 81 chest rig and running their AK, what we used to call, jokingly call a jihadist starter kit, they were getting shot down. I mean, that was just that. But it was the guys who looked like civilians that were kind of in the shadows, and they introduced that moral question. You know, is this person an adversary or are they not? But further, am I justified in what I'm doing over here in taking down what I see as a threat? It introduces a question. So my friend and author, very well-known author, Matt Bracken, has been writing quite a bit here lately on what he sees going on in Virginia, some of the issues that are there, as well as his thoughts on organization. And one of the things that he's consistently talked about, both in private conversations as well as his interviews that he's done on InfoWars and other places, is the lethality of a guy with a 400-yard deer rifle. I think this is a very profound thing to point out. And it's something that for us in when we've studied asymmetric warfare, when we've instructed asymmetric warfare and elements that I introduce into my scout course, these are very important concepts to think about. You can be very effective with a deer rifle. Very effective. You know, do you have to have the latest and greatest AR-15, the latest and greatest ammunition? You know, do you have to have the dope on your rifle, you know, all everything dialed in? Well, in under ideal circumstances, yeah, you would. Do you have to have that to be effective? No, you don't. As any deer hunter can tell you, the effect of a 30-06 or a 308 on white-tailed deer, which anatomically in size is similar to a human, can be devastating, especially when you're using the right type of ammunition. Hog hunters, same thing. You know, and ammunition choices that we use to hunt should be the very same ones that we use in our guerrilla weapons. So let's talk about that a little bit. Overseas, I was blessed enough to use a few different types of ammo. 18 LR. It was 175 Sierra Match King. Excellent round. Very, very effective. And used it quite a bit. But we also had Mark 262, which was Black Hills. And 77 grain Sierra Match King in 5.56 to use out of AR. And both of those, open tip match, technically not a hollow point, but it kind of is. Both of those rounds really effective. And as an anti-personnel round, they work very well, I can tell you from personal experience. But we had to satisfy legal requirements, the rules of war, Geneva Convention, because that's how militaries work. Now, I know that a lot of people in the preparedness movement, you know, they buy ammo in bulk, you know, 1,000 rounds at a time and or more. And a lot of times they're getting cheap ammo, you know, 55 grain XM-193 and, you know, 62 grain green tip penetrator. I'll tell you, I hope you're not getting green tip penetrator. That stuff's not good. You know, I'm sure I'll get a few comments about that, but look, that stuff zips right through. There's very little terminal effect of it. Once the round destabilizes, and out of a 16-inch barrel, if you're running anywhere from a 1-9, 1-8 twist, it'll start to destabilize around 500 meters. And it might be okay then, but for anything inside of that, 62 grain stuff is 62 grain green tip penetrator, I should say, M855. That is the last choice, in my opinion. So what would be my first choice? I'm going to say anything made by Barnes. Barnes is, they've been making ammunition for a very long time. The story of Barnes goes back before Vietnam, and the old SF guys, old hands in SF, were developing close-range sniper rounds all the way back in Vietnam. And the 450 Bushmaster came from that program, or came out of that program. Barnes made the original ammunition, and it's all copper load, meaning it does real, real well as far as expansion goes. Barnes Triple Shock X, excellent ammo if you are into reloading. I am. And Barnes Triple Shock X 70 grain out of an AR is absolutely devastating. Absolutely devastating. I know what it does on animals. So when I tell you what it could do as an anti-personnel round, you can venture to guess. If you're not into reloading, Barnes Vortex 70 grain 556 ammo.com is running a really good special on that. Now, the ammo isn't cheap. 200 rounds for just under $200. Talking about a dollar a round. But you have to understand something. If you're the kind of guy that thinks tactical training is standing in a formation and doing mag dumps at static targets, guess what you're not doing? Anything tactical. There's nothing tactical to that. All right? Those are CQB. And while split times are great, split times are a benchmark of performance, when you're talking about actual realities of fighting, it's like Clint Smith said, and Clint Smith's awesome out at Gunsight. He needs no introduction to probably a lot of people in this audience. He's a Vietnam veteran, Marine. I never saw a split time in combat. And, you know, if you're shooting accurately enough, you're going to be fast enough. Not only that, though, I'm going to use every bit of advantage that I have. And I can tell you this from a lot of time in combat. I got over 3 years of my life spent overseas, 2 tours in Iraq, 1 in Afghanistan. And I'm telling you, if you can be the one that initiates that contact, 99% of the time, you've already won that fight. You pick where and when those conditions of that fight that you're going to set up. If you're going out and all you're doing is react to contact, squad attack, etc., but you're not implementing other elements, speed and surprise, elements of camouflage into your gear, if you're not running stalking lanes, that's not tactical training, folks. I'm sorry. That might look real good if you are trying to film yourself, put it up on YouTube, and think you're really cool, you're really doing something. But that's not tactical training, all right? So, camouflage and concealment. You know, getting back to Matt Bracken's statement about the 400-yard deer rifle, it's really profound because you can implement a lot of equipment that you wouldn't necessarily consider tactical, but you can implement it. You can press that into service. And is it effective? Yeah, absolutely. But you need to be training with it now. You need to be training with it now, and you need to have that organizational skill on the ground now to be able to effectively implement the guys with those rifles. But taking a step beyond that, there's a lot that you can do with the AR. These days, it seems like a lot of folks will buy an AR-15. They'll set it up for some sort of close quarter battle type setup, you know, the tac light on it and everything else. And the AR pistol that I've got sitting over here that came from Palmetto State Armory, I set it up for home defense, and that is the role that it is serving. But it's a 10.5-inch barrel. I don't expect it to be able to shoot past 200 meters. And in a home defense kind of grab and go, everyday mobility type setup, hey, that's perfectly fine. But if I'm going to do something a little more dedicated, like hit the woods and use my cover concealment, camouflage, speed, and surprise to my advantage, I'm going to be carrying a different weapon. I've got a BCM SPR, and I've got a Geissele SOP mod rail on it, and the setup is absolutely bomb-proof. Guys that have come out to the scout course, they've seen me run it, as well as a couple of students have also run it in class. Just got an old-school hair spy pod on it because I know that hair spy pods work. I've used them for a long time now, almost 2 decades. I was using them before I went in the Army, and they work. No reason to change it. Are there better bipods on the market? Yeah, maybe, but it's, you know, I look at that as it's just a better mousetrap. But I've got it topped with Primary Arms, at least for right now. I've got it topped with the Primary Arms 1-8, and you know, why I say for right now, I may move to something with more magnification.
But right now, that works perfect. And what I really like about it is that Advanced Combat Sighting System, or ACSS reticle, is so good. It is literally so good. It is so simple to teach folks how to make hits. And in the Scout course, we take guys from zeroing at 25 and confirming the accuracy of their weapon at 100 meters, and then I take them out to just under 500 meters and get them on steel so that they're hitting a man-sized target at 500 meters. That gets you a lot of confidence because those students know if they can make hits with their weapon they brought to class out to 500 meters, anything within 500 meters is toast. And there's two reasons that I teach them that. One, at 500 meters, the 5.56 is starting to lose some steam. Does it work past that? Yeah, it can. But 500 meters is a good number for the 5.56. Also, the way light infantry units work in conventional militaries, if they take contact, now, this is getting out of the book knowledge, schoolhouse stuff. This is real world. When they start taking contact, they're going to pull back and they will call for fire. That is doctrine in literally every unit on the face of the earth. They will call for fire because artillery is the big support for them, right? That and close air support, or CAS. Well, there's this thing called danger close. And if you are too close to the target for artillery, you're going to have to call out danger close. For most forms of artillery, that's 600 meters. So if you're able to make those hits within 500 meters, and let's say those soldiers did not see where the shots came from, they can't see you because you are effectively camouflaged, and they cannot return fire because they don't have positive identification on you, they're going to have a real hard time dropping that artillery. They don't have a distance and direction. And even if they do, they're going to have to call danger close. Danger close doesn't mean that artillery is not going to be used, but it does mean that they're going to have to take more time. The gun bunnies on the other end, field artillery guys, sorry, but I like calling you gun bunnies. Those guys on the other end are going to have to take more time and additional precautions. So it's really important to understand that. I call it the gorilla's half kilometer. Other folks call it, you know, being inside the OODA loop, or orient, observe, decide, and act. Really, really important to know these things. And it is a tactic and a technique that has worked several times throughout history. I know from being in the conventional army on my trips to Iraq that the sniper threat was one that dictated everything that we did. It was in our minds. It was in the back of our heads. We knew that there was a threat out there. You could never let your guard down. We were looking for an enemy to fight. And when we couldn't find one, that's one of the most frustrating things. There's nobody to return fire to. You're helpless. So you've had all this training to make you literally the baddest dude on the block, and you have nobody to shoot back at. It's a frustrating thing. So the psychological effect of the sniper is really, really important, especially when you're talking about four guerrilla forces. There's a few really good books out there on that I'm going to recommend. The first one is Fry the Brain, Art of Urban Sniping by John West. It's an excellent resource on the history and implementation of snipers in guerrilla conflict. John West is a former SF sniper himself and a sniper instructor. Excellent manual to have on hand. Another one, Brandon Webb, The Killing School. It's a series of vignettes of snipers from the contemporary global war on terror that have gained some notoriety for different stuff. But Brandon Webb describes his training methods and the methodology that he had when he took over the SEAL Sniper School. Really, really good book to have, especially when you're looking for pointers on training your own group. The next book's Ultimate Sniper by Major John Plaster. John Plaster is an SOG veteran, studies an observation group. he wrote probably the most comprehensive manual on sniping that I know of that's ever been written. And if you're into this, if you are into the long range game, or not even the long range game, but just want to know about the field craft, the science, the techniques of making hits at longer distance, he's the guy. His book is one that you need to have on your bookshelf. Finally, I'm going to recommend One Shot, One Kill by Charles W. Sasser. Charles W. Sasser was a scout sniper in Vietnam in the Marine Corps. Excellent book. You're going to find a lot of lessons in that book that he details as field craft, mistakes in field craft, and the psychological damage that occurs when you make errors on your end, as well as the successes. What is successful? Piece of gear, moving on a little bit, that you should be implementing into your tactical equipment is a type of ghillie suit. What a ghillie suit is, it's not something to make you look like Chewbacca running around in the woods. Effective ghillie suits, in my experience, are the simplest ones. What you're really looking for is the ability to mask the human outline in the woods. And one of the things that's becoming very popular these days is a thing called a cobra hood as a ghillie base. Basically, it's a hood with two sleeves attached to it. And then from there, you have your lashing points where you can put some jute twine on it or ghillie twine. And you're going to want to put some of that on there to get some of that shag. It's going to break up the outline. And when you're making a ghillie suit, you know, it takes a lot of time to put that jute twine on there. But one of the things that you absolutely need to do is age it. Whenever I've built ghillie suits in the past, and the way that we used to build them in the Army was to take an old pair of BDUs, cut the back out of it, and replace it with mesh netting. Attach the jute twine to it, and you would do the same with the pants. You would sew knee pads in onto the knees. Some guys would take Carhartt, like duck burlap material, and sew on the knees and up the thighs for low crawling. And those are kind of fading out. It is a schoolhouse thing to do when you're talking about sniper schools out there. Those are fading out because, in a practical sense, we just don't use them very much when you're talking about implementing it with other pieces of your kit. And Cobra Hood is much, much more simple in construction. It doesn't take that long to put one together, but you can throw it over top of your gear and then you can take it back off when need be. But it's really important to know that with ghillie suits, the camouflaging actually does not come from the suit itself. It comes from the amount of vegetation that you're using in your natural environment, as well as selecting a good spot for your final firing position. You know, you have to get set up in a spot that has cover, concealment, and obscurement. You're going to have to shoot through vegetation. Never, ever in the real world are you going to have that perfect, clean shot. You know, so one of the things that I implement in training is I have the students in the scout course, when we're doing the marksmanship portion, shoot through tall grass. Now, that's frustrating for the students. They're not used to doing that. They're used to being on a nice, clean, square range, you know, laying in the prone and it, you know, on concrete or in some gravel or something, and everything's real comfortable. I'm getting you out of that comfort zone. You're not going to be comfortable. You're not going to have that clear sight picture. You're going to have to focus and concentrate on your target when you are making those shots. And it is frustrating. It's a very difficult thing when people are used to being trained a certain way, and now we're introducing those stressors. But by the end, when you get to your final objective and you're making that final shot in class, it all comes together, because you're going to have leaves in between you and the target. You're going to have vegetation. You're going to have glare. You're going to have mirage. You're going to have all that stuff. And you're going to have to sit there and watch your target for a while, collect some information on what they're doing. You know, there's so much more to the implementation of a guerrilla marksman, or a guerrilla sniper, as some people have called it, and, you know, simply being out on the range and taking those shots, whether it's 50 meters or whether it's 500 meters or whether it's 1500 meters. I like to focus on the field craft end of it because that introduces the realism in the training. There's other enablers out there. Bog shooting tripods. Bog is a company that primarily makes equipment for long range hunting out west, but they make an excellent shooting tripod. Something that you need to carry on your kit. I like using bipods with the AR as well as my the couple of Remington 700s that I have. But shooting off of a tripod is a lot more comfortable when you're shooting in a seated position for a long period of time, as well as being more stable than a bipod would be, or even shooting sticks would be. Bog makes them. I've got a link down below. They're a site affiliate for us, and it's just a really good company. And they've been around for a while, but most important is that they're building a good product. I'd also like to give a shout out to Ballistic Advantage Barrels as well as Aero Precision. Ballistic Advantage is the barrel company for Aero Precision. And from what I've seen coming out of them, they're making some excellent AR barrels for the money. Very, very accurate. Aero Precision, I've seen a few of their rifles come through class. Jesse James, you know, one of my best friends, fellow writer here on American Partisan. He's got an Aero Precision rifle that is top notch, man. This thing is, it's just a good weapon. Very well put together. The attention to detail is definitely there. And looking at it along with my BCM, you know, I don't think you can go wrong with that. And, you know, with that said, Palmetto State Armory, a longtime site supporter, site affiliate, and Palmetto State Armory is building some good stuff. So John Ammon from UW Gear came to the last scout course that I ran and had his Palmetto State Armory SPR. Top-notch rifle, man. And he had no problems taking that thing out to 500 meters, making solid center of mass hits on steel, using 77 grain Sierra Match King. Just really, really good stuff. So, you know, I'm going to round things out by giving a shout out to Ready Made Resources. One of the biggest things that's going to increase that pucker factor for your adversary is the ability for you to fight at night. If you're able to observe at night, you're able to make solid hits on targets at night, their pucker factor is tight and you have won that battle. Or at least if they have night vision capability, you have leveled the battlefield. Give them a shout. Bob Griswold runs a top-notch operation over there. Send them an email. Check their website out. Tell them that we sent you over there. Tell them that NC Scout said that he's a good dude and he's a guy that you want to work with. Folks, I'd finally like to say this is episode 3 and I am having a ton of fun doing this. The response to this podcast format has been very positive. You know, I've got a bunch of emails from people, you know, saying, "Hey man, keep it up." And folks, I can't thank you enough for listening, for having such a very kind-hearted response to this. It's a dangerous world that we're living in, and I have a bad feeling that it's about to get a lot more dangerous. The reason that I'm doing this, the reason that I'm putting myself out there to help all of you is not just that I run a training company or not just that I have a website, but it's that I want to be able to share that information to give our side a fighting chance. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, anything that you want to add, feel free to do so. And hit that subscribe button in the sidebar. You know, put your email in there, sign up. You'll get all the latest from us. Check out our sponsors that are in the sidebar. Show them some love. Say that we sent you over there. But folks, I really think that the next week and the next several weeks into the month of January are going to be very dangerous, as well as big changes for our republic and possibly our way of life here in America. There is not a more important time and a more dangerous time than right now in our lifetimes. I think that we're getting ready to see some major things happen, and you need to be ready for that. If you're looking for training, I've got a lot of training opportunities on the calendar. I'm going to be running the RTO course. I've got a couple spots left. Literally, I think I have one spot left. I got to check the calendar. I've got a couple of spots left in the Intel course that I am running in New Jersey for you folks in the Northeast. And I've got a couple of spots left in the RTO course in April. But I've got a lot of courses on the calendar. They're filling up quick. If you're looking for training for an uncertain tomorrow, please come out. I will be honored to be able to work with you, to be able to train with you. Keep your heads down, folks, and stay frosty. It's Cincy Scout out.